Good Tuesday afternoon, and welcome to a Juneau afternoon here on KTOO FM at 104.3 in Juneau, Alaska. I'm Andy Klein. I'm your host for today. Pat Moore is feeling a little under the weather, so I'm going to run the ship for today, but he'll be back with us on Friday. We've got folks from Mudrooms here today. Pat Race is going to be here. We think Alita Bus is going to be here, too. And we'll be talking to them about the upcoming Mudrooms. Also going to be talking to folks about V-Day and the Billion Rising in Juneau. It's going to be happening on Thursday. Dealing with unwanted catalogs and phone books. That's a discussion we'll have a little bit later today. And also, we'll talk to folks about career technical education classes that are being offered, and also a governor's proclamation about that. That's coming up on Juneau afternoon. We're here in Juneau. There's decreasing clouds today. It's been nice and kind of sunny out for a lot of the day. Highs right in the mid-30s. Mostly cloudy skies for tonight with a chance of snow and rain and lows around 28 degrees. Snow and rain in the morning for Wednesday, then a chance of rain in the afternoon, and snow and rain likely on Wednesday night. Right now, here's National Native News.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A tribal leader will attend tonight's State of the Union address with the Minnesota Congresswoman, Jefferson Keel, President of the National Congress of American Indians and Lieutenant Governor of the Chickasaw Nation, is the guest of Representative Betty McCollum. According to the Congresswoman's office, McCollum was elected as Democratic co-chair of the Congressional Native American Caucus. Keel will lay out Indian country priorities Thursday with the State of Indian Nations address. The speech will be delivered from Washington, D.C. The Mashpee Wampanoag tribe says it's received a positive preliminary advisory opinion from the Department of the Interior. The tribe announced today that its land in Taunton and Mashpee, Massachusetts, would qualify as an initial reservation once the land into trust process is approved. The initial finding includes a provision used for newly recognized tribes which don't have an established reservation like the Mashpee. Part of the determination included analysis of the tribe's historic ties to the area. The status would allow the tribe to conduct Class 2 and Class 3 gaming. Chairman Cedric Cromwell says the news is another huge step in the development of a casino resort in Taunton. The tribe points to jobs and economic opportunities with the project. The tribe says it has acquired an option for land negotiated with the city and won support of town residents. An Alaska Native man is part of an expedition marking the 100th anniversary of the first ascent of Alaska's Mount McKinley. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, most of the climbers are descendants of the original 1913 team that conquered North America's highest peak.
Alaskans call Mount McKinley Denali, an Athabaskan word meaning the high one. An Athabaskan Walter Harper was the first person to set foot on the over 20,000-foot peak summit 100 years ago. Harper's great-grandnephew, Dana Wright, is a member of the Denali 2013 Centennial Climb, a planned retracing of the historic achievement.
I'm doing everything I can to be a good role model for Alaska Natives and for anybody, really. I want to get up there. Get up there safely and get the whole team up and back down as best we can, and I want to come back and tell everybody about it.
Another Centennial team member, Dan Hopkins, says it's a project goal to recognize the contributions of Alaska Natives to the 1913 First Ascent Expedition, famously led by Hudson Stuck and Harry Karstens.
It's the story of Walter Harper, Johnny Fredson, and Esaias George. They're incredible achievements made by these young Native Alaskans, for the most part, especially to the broader public. These stories have virtually gone untold.
The June 2013 Denali Centennial Expedition is endorsed by the National Congress of American Indians, and members are working with a nonprofit group to document their experience and share it online with kids, including in Alaska Native communities. For National Native News in Fairbanks, Alaska, I'm Dan Bross.
In Canada, young people from Manitoba First Nations walked into Winnipeg Monday after a more than 150-mile journey. According to the CBC, they were at the legislature protesting changes to federal and environmental laws. The march was part of Idle No More movements that have swept across the country pressing for government action. The youth were calling for the protection of Canada's lakes and waterways. On this day in 1974, federal judge George Bolt issued a ruling reaffirming fishing rights of Washington tribes. The case became known as the Bolt decision. Prior to the ruling, tribes held fish-ins to reassert their fishing rights that were established in the 1800s by the federal government. The Bolt decision led to tensions between tribal and non-tribal fishermen. It was also held up in later court decisions. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, and by the law firm of Sanofsky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. Every Alaskan can support causes and organizations they care about when they file for a permanent fund dividend. Use Pick, Click, Give when filing online for your PFD. When you select KNBA-FM, Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, you support National Native News. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Social D there. That's the story of my life. And a lot of folks who are telling the stories of their lives are like stories that happen in their lives. Gather at a really cool thing called Mud Rooms. It happens once a month. And with us right now is Alita Buss and Pat Race, two of the people on the storyboard for Mud Rooms. That's a very cool name for a board.
Yeah,
I like that.
It's pretty clever.
Yeah,
I didn't come up with it.
I like it. And you guys got Mud Rooms coming up. When's it happening tomorrow?
Tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night at 7, of course. Seven is a consistent theme in Mud Rooms.
Lots of sevens. Seven speakers, 7-minute stories, $7 at the door towards charity.
Makes it easy to remember.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We need that.
We should probably start having it on the 7th.
On the 7th day of every month. That would make sense. That's why we have Pet. He's the brains in the operation.
Wow.
I'm actually the slacker board member that doesn't know what's going on usually.
But or like only in July, the 7th month, and that's it.
Yes.
7 times in July. No.
We're making it more complicated.
Let's back up. Mud Rooms. It's happening. Where does it happen? Over at the Holy Trinity Church, right? The McFeeters Hall kind of area?
Yeah, it's beautiful in there. If you haven't been, it's what a great opportunity to go.
It is gorgeous in there.
It is. It's amazing. They did
natural
wonderful work with that building. Yeah.
So are you in the actual McFeeter, the theater space, or you're in the actual...
Sanctuary.
Sanctuary, yes,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's lots of space in there for folks, but it kind of gets to be standing room only, doesn't it? I mean, by the time it gets going, I mean, it's good to get there early.
Yeah, they've been pretty full. Usually there's... usually it's just... packed enough that everyone can kind of squeeze in, but they've been definitely well attended.
Cool. Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about some of the speakers for this upcoming month here for tomorrow night. Who's on tap, Alita?
Well,
I know that Rebecca Vandewater is one person that's listed as a speaker on the Facebook site.
Yeah, and she's a midwife. She's a young lady in town. Great, active outdoors lady.
Very cool.
She's speaking. We don't know what about.
Do you ask people ahead of time, or do you just line up the people and then say, okay, go for it? Or sometimes you know what they're going to talk about a little bit? Or
so we have like a storyboard, like our little group of people that goes out and tries to find people that have a story. And so it's usually people that we know or we've heard of through other people that are kind of interesting or charismatic or have just some weird experience that they want to share.
And yet I haven't been asked. I don't know what's going on.
You've been asked multiple times and declined.
For the record.
Yeah. if someone needs help like developing a story, we're happy to talk to them about
right.
it. And I know Amanda's done that with several people where she's kind of like given them a nudge in the right direction. And,
right, because you don't want just people who like are these like, oh, hey, I'm a great storyteller. You also want people who maybe normally get a little bit out of their comfort level but have something really because everyone has something really interesting to talk about that's happened in their life or even that they can relate a story about, you know, and bringing that out of people is a really important part of this.
Yeah, that's actually why I'm really excited Sarah Ginter's telling a story. She was one of those people that was really like, yeah, thanks for asking me, but I don't really... Yeah, she was...
Who's an utterly fascinating person and a great writer and an amazing storyteller in her writing.
Right, but standing up in front of people is a whole different story. And so it's a kind of a brave new experience for her. And so that's going to be exciting to see.
Very cool.
She has lots of stories to tell as she just finished biking across the country.
If anyone saw her blog that she was doing while that was happening, it was absolutely beautiful and amazing. And it took you to the place and it relayed danger and excitement and, you know, all the elements of an across country road trip on bikes. It was really quite a piece of work. So yeah. I hope some of that will be told in the mudrooms. Yeah.
She has a gift for the written word, and like Pat's saying, it's a different ball game when you're getting up in front of hundreds of people telling a personal story too. You know, these aren't fables; these are real life events that have happened to people that we're trying to get heard. We are looking for very average people, although from time to time, like this month, we have Jeff Kirsch, who...
He's a ringer.
You know,
Marion Call, ringer.
I don't know if there are average people.
Those people are ringers.
I don't know if those people exist, for real.
His stuff's been on Comedy Central, Huffington Post, recently Subaru's Drive magazine, after he, in his column, I guess that's how it went, his Slack-tied column, like, talked about how much he loved that Subaru of his.
Oh, very cool. And so Subaru picked that up?
And published it in their magazine. Yeah.
That's very cool. Wow. Yeah. And Marion Call is going to do it. We know her as a wonderful singer and performer, but just doing a straight story, that's an interesting switch for her.
Yeah, and I've got to observe some of that. So it's really interesting to see her try and, you know, puzzle together something that isn't a song. And she's a good writer, and this will be a different experience for her. But she's comfortable in front of people, but not necessarily in this storytelling context.
Right.
So I'm sure she'll do great, but it's all very different and new, and it'll be fun.
No accompanist.
Yeah. No guitarist to save her. Yeah.
Is she using the typewriter?
I don't know. I will see what happens.
To keep the rhythm of her story.
The other names I have here on the Facebook site are Andrew Miller and Steve Davis and Allison Holtkamp. Do you have any ideas what those guys are going to be talking about, or?
Allison is talking about knitting. She is a great, lots of people have seen her in Perseverance Productions. She's a great actress, and most recently was Addo Annie in Oklahoma, just the brightest, most fun character of that play,
cool.
I thought.
Yeah, I love the breadth of the community that we get involved in this. I mean, like, we've had legislators and school board members and parents and kids, and just it's really interesting to see this cross section of the community.
It's gotten a real momentum, hasn't it? This whole mudroom. So it's kind of, I mean, you've been in it since the beginning, Alita, and it's get kind of a little bit of tiger by the tail after a while, right? All of a sudden, people are really wanting to get involved in this, and the response from the community has been great.
Yeah, I think it's struck a chord with people. You know, we've had such a warm reception in Juneau, and it's great. People are turning out. And
mostly because there's cookies at intermission.
the Rookery.
I did not know that.
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
Great. It's fun. But you should mention that all the money that we're raising goes to local charities.
Which ones? Are they named, or you kind of pick different ones for different months?
Yeah, this season all of our profits are going to the Imagination Library that brings a book a month to kids to the age of 5. And so that's what your $7 donation goes to at the
great
door.
Wow, that's awesome. Yeah.
And it is. So there's treats. It's a nice way to spend the evening. There's treats that you can buy for an extra buck or two. The Rookery donates those, so that goes straight to profits, which is great. And then there's music before the show and then at intermission. So it's very enjoyable, and it doesn't run too long either, so you don't have to commit to like a full evening. It's like an hour and a half from start to finish.
Nice. So. All right. Well, it's Mudrooms. It's happening tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. It's at the Holy Trinity Church, and it's a really, you know, wonderful time to get together with people you've seen in the community. Maybe you've just seen them, know them to say hi, or don't even know their first name, but have seen them forever, and they're going to tell you a really fun, interesting story. 7 minutes for each one. and seven people talking 7 minutes each, and it starts at 7 o'clock.
Yeah, and we hope people will come and get excited about it and tell their own stories.
Right.
So just grab one of us after the show and we'll put you down for next time.
Right. And if you can, bring $7 to contribute to the very worthy cause of the Imagination
Library,
which is a great tie-in with stories and getting kids to think about telling stories and thinking about their own story of their life. All right, Alita and Pat, thanks so much for coming in. Really appreciate it.
Thanks,
Andy. Mudrooms. It's tomorrow at 7. Go check it out.
This afternoon on 360 North at 5 o'clock, watch President Obama deliver his State of the Union address to Congress, a PBS NewsHour special. That's followed by the BBC World News at 7 with Alaska Weather at 7:30. At 8 o'clock, it's Kutia, Journey to Wellness, with Native Report at 8:30. Then the documentary Contrary Warrior, The Life and Times of Adam Fortunate Eagle, follows at 9. That's all tonight on 360 North and 360north.org.
Welcome back to a Juno Afternoon, and as Chaka Khan is saying about being every woman, we're going to celebrate women here in a couple of days here with a 1 Billion Rising event happening in Juneau, Alaska, and with me right now are folks from all different kinds of agencies here. We have Sarahlyn Tabachnik. Did I get that right?
Tabachnik.
I got
good
it
job.
Right. Very good. All right.
Thank you.
From Aware, and Phil Campbell's here from Northern Light Church. Hi, Phil.
Hi.
And also Ann Whitty is here from the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. So thanks to all of you for coming in. And tell me a little bit about this event that's happening on Thursday.
I'll
turn to you.
This is
yeah,
Annie.
Sure.
I am with the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault, which is established in the Department of Public Safety within the state of Alaska. And this year, in coordination with V-Day, this is the 15th year's anniversary for V-Day. So they are having this 1 billion rising organizational campaign across the globe. And it's 1 billion women and the people who love and support them. And currently, there are over 200 countries involved and 3,500 events going
now,
on all
around
the world.
Now, when you say a billion women are a billion people are all participating in this at the same kind of on the same day at the same time.
Right.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm. That's the idea.
That's the idea.
The goal. Yes.
It's really cool. That's 1/7 of the world's population. So that's quite a bit.
Yeah, the reason for that is the statistics. United Nations has statistics that 1 out of 3 women have experienced sexual violence or will experience it in their lifetime, which makes about 1 billion women. And so it's been a really silent kind of violence. People don't talk about it much. And so Eve Ensler really kind of originated this with her V-Day board and said, we've got to do something big this year. And yeah. So it's a huge event.
Well, tell me about AWARE's participation in this.
We will be at the SOB at noon. There's going to be a big Juno Rising, and there will be speakers and dancers and singers and really all the communities invited to step up and rise. And this event is about dancing.
So. Well, I mean, and it's an event that absolutely every single person in Juno can come to and should be celebrating. The idea of bringing a voice to this, what, as you were saying, is something that maybe is not talked about the way it should be. And part of that kind of feeds the problem, you know, and so that part of it, bringing it out in the open, talking about it openly and saying, if this is something that's happening in someone's life that you know about, you know, now's the time to act.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's why it's really great that AWARE is participating in this event, and then they'll be there as well and be able to talk about their program. Sarah Lynn and people from the Juno Prevention, a coalition of Prevention of Violence Coalition, mm-hmm. will be there as well to talk about ways people can get involved or access services.
And Phil, tell me about how Northern Light Church is involved as well.
Well, Northern Light is committed to being involved in the community and committed to social justice, and this is a major social justice issue, gender violence. And I'm involved as pastor of the church, but also as an individual and specifically as a man. I mean, gender violence is a male problem. And I think it's essential for men to stand up and say, we're responsible and we really need to do something about this. We can't depend on someone else fixing our problem for us. Now, it's a problem visited upon women. And so I feel honored and grateful that women have invited men to join with them and said, you can live into an identity as an ally. To be part of the solution to the problem that you've caused. And so I think it's just crucial that men are involved. I think it's essential that the religious communities are involved. Often there has been a collusion between some traditional religious beliefs and an acceptance of violence against women, an acceptance of patriarchy, an acceptance of male superiority. So as a pastor, I'm also part of it to witness against those messages and say that equality and community are the values that we all share and that we're going to celebrate. So we're going to do something really positive as we dance. And those who can't be there at the SOB are urged to dance in place. So at noon,
okay.
I mean, to witness wherever you are, you're at your desk, you're in your place of work, you're eating your lunch, and let people know why you're dancing so that this isn't just an event that's located one place, although we want as many people as we can have in the atrium, but we also want people all over Juno participating with those all over the world to end gender violence.
Well, as you say, it's just something that, I mean, it's an unpleasant subject. And when we've people from AWARE have come into the studio before and we've talked about these things, and that seems like one of the key points. People are ashamed to talk about it sometimes. If they know something's happening at a neighbor's house, they don't want to bring it up because it's an uncomfortable thing to talk about. But that whole thing of bringing it out in the open, taking action, witnessing, mm-hmm. as you say, is maybe that first step towards helping prevent the next time something like this might happen.
Sure.
So tell me a little bit more about some of AWARE's programs and some of the other ways that you're kind of counteracting this in the community.
Right. Well, you know, we have intervention services and emergency services, so people can call AWARE 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, if they have questions or if they just want to know how would I help a neighbor, or maybe they're having insomnia from something that was perpetrated against them as a child. So that number is 800-478-1090 or 586-1090. And then there's ongoing services, Safe Shelter. We provide safe space for women and kids.
And that's how I think most people associate the WEAR shelter with that function.
I think you're right. They think of it as shelter. Mm-hmm. And of course, that's just one aspect because there's ongoing services, ongoing advocacy. If someone needs support, they're at the hospital having a medical exam or a forensic exam, a WEAR is able to be there also on call. We do a lot of work in the schools, a lot of work with kids, trying to break the cycle and allow them to talk about it. Because when kids don't talk about it, they kind of normalize it. So a little reality check. It's not your fault what happened. It's not your mom's fault.
Yeah, you had that. You have that great program going on right now, Girls on the Run, which is training kids to get to the 5K mark and you know, and then working through this kind of communication with a mentor through that process and kind of, you know, getting, you know, that whole thing of just getting through that communication barrier, and if there's something going on, talking to someone, letting someone know, making that first step so that then the services can start coming in and, you know, people can start helping.
Right. It's tremendously healing just to externalize what you're holding inside.
On the council of that you serve on, are there certain things or guidance that you give to people that might be aware of a situation that's going on? How do you ask them to move forward with that?
Well, I'll tell you, we are the funding agency. We are the state vehicle for funding 20 programs across the state.
So people on the ground are really
services.
These people, yeah.
Uh-huh, and we also fund approved batterers programs in the state so that perpetrators are held accountable. And we also do fund some prevention programs as well across the state. And there are so many now. Girls on the Run is one, Coaching Boys to Men. And everyone will learn about those on Thursday when they come. We also train law enforcement courts, personnel, health officials, OCS, you know, workers as well, school educators. And we also do the statistical data. We collect statistical data, which in Alaska, I brought that with me. It's important. I think people know that out of every 100 adult women who reside in the state of Alaska, 59 experienced intimate partner violence, sexual violence, or both. And that those statistics are from 2010.
Now, is that particularly high compared to other states?
It's one of the highest.
Is it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we're
kind
pretty
of a shocking,
close up to, yeah.
It's really
yeah.
a shocking figure to hear that that almost 60% of women have experienced some form of violence in this way.
That's right.
Yeah, thanks for saying that, Andy, because it should be shocking.
Yeah.
You know, 6 out of 10 women. Wherever you are at your workplace, in your faith community, at your dining room table, you know.
And I think that's part of the importance of this event on Thursday is that what is a global pandemic is it's almost as if it's accepted as normal. And so that we have to do something like this to draw attention to it. Whereas it should be newsworthy every day. And so I'm really glad that we have this opportunity to do it, but that's precisely why it's so important is to bring it out of the shadows and into awareness. One of the exciting things I think that we have a potential in terms of following up after this event is a new aspect that's just coming online now of the prevention work that AWARE is coordinating in the community, and that's what we're calling community cafes, where there's going to be opportunity for people in the community to speak about this in an ongoing way, small groups, deal with the reality of violence, deal with the reality of oppression, see how the interlocking oppressions work. I mean, often the abuser is someone who had been abused, and how do you break that cycle? How do you understand the dynamics of racism and classism and historical trauma that then feed the manifestation of gender violence? And so all the ways those are interrelated, all the ways we can continue the conversation beyond Thursday. And so you'll hear more about that on Thursday as well.
Great. Now, we should stress that this is a very obviously serious topic, but sounds like a pretty fun event. Right, this is going to be fun.
It's going to be fun.
What are you asking people to do when they show up at the state office building? I know that they're supposed to wear pink or red, right?
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
Is there other stuff that they should be ready to do when they get to the state office building?
Well, they better be ready to dance and move.
Okay. Yeah. Well, how is the music going to be provided? Is there a live band, or is there just some music piped in, or
well,
is it
we
the
actually,
organ?
Well, we actually, the Tlingit, there's a Tlingit dancing group that will be there as well. And we've got some classics that will be played in between some speakers.
Great.
We have a performance speaker, we believe, who will be there as well. And we'll encourage people to get up and say in one sentence why they're rising with us that day, so they'll really feel part of what's
Great.
Going on. We'll give them some resources, things they can hook into in Juneau area this coming year so that they can pledge their action.
Great. Mm-hmm. Well, so it's all happening starting Thursday. It's at noontime in the state office building. It's happening worldwide. You're just one of a billion people all celebrating this event, and we're doing our part here in Juneau by heading over to the 1 Billion Rising in Juneau. It's happening at the state office building, so bring a lunch and wear pink or red and join all these folks here and a bunch of other folks in the community for music and dance and all kind of to bring attention to this, as you say, a pandemic of violence against women and something that we all want to make sure we do everything we can to prevent in the future not happening to just even one more person would be a wonderful goal. Well, thanks so much to all of you for coming
in.
I really
Thank
appreciate
you so much,
it.
Sandy.
It's Ann Whitty, Phil Campbell, and Sarah Lynn Tabachnik, and it's the 1 Billion Rising. So see you at noon at the state office building, and bring your dancing shoes.
That's
Here's Garrison Keillor with the Writer's Almanac.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, the 12th of February, 2013. It's the birthday of two men born on the same day in 1809, Charles Darwin, Abraham Lincoln. Abraham Lincoln born in a log cabin near Hodgenville, Kentucky, 1809. Unlike most presidents, he never wrote any memoirs, so we know very little about his early life. He had about 1 year of schooling. His mother died when he was nine. Spent much of his adolescence working with an axe, but in his early 20s, Lincoln decided to make himself into a respectable man and moved to New Salem, Illinois, and then to Springfield. Charles Darwin, born in Shrewsbury in Shropshire, England, 1809, he read a book by Sir Charles Lyell, Principles of Geology, suggesting that the Earth was millions of years old, and Darwin went off on an expedition to the Galapagos Islands, spaced far enough apart that the animals on them had evolved over time into different species. It took him about 20 years to publish his findings in his book On the Origin of Species. This is the week of Valentine's Day, a good time to think about love letters. Zelda Fitzgerald wrote some, who was F. Scott Fitzgerald's great muse. He modeled many of his characters after her and even included lines in his books that were from her letters. They went on their first date on her 18th birthday, and she wrote him this letter when she was 18. Sweetheart, please, please don't be so depressed. We'll be married soon, and then these lonesome nights will be over forever. There's nothing in all the world I want but you and your precious love. All the material things are nothing. Don't ever think of the things you can't give me. You've trusted me with the dearest heart of all. If you should die, oh, darling, darling Scott, it'd be like going blind. I'd have no purpose in life, just a pretty decoration. Don't you think I was made for you? I feel like you had me ordered and I was delivered to you to be worn. I want you to wear me like a watch charm or a buttonhole bouquet to the world. Without you, dearest, dearest, I couldn't see or hear or feel or think or live. I love you so, and I'm never in all our lives going to let us be apart another night. In 1920, 1 week after his novel This Side of Paradise was published, Zelda and Scott got married at St. Patrick's in New York City and became the most famous couple in America. Here's a poem for today by Sharon Bryan, entitled The Underworld. When I lived in the foothills, birds flocked to the feeder, house finches, goldfinches, sky blue lazuli buntings, impeccably dressed chickadees, sparrows in work clothes, even hummingbirds fast forwarding through the trees. Some of them disappeared after a week, headed north, I thought, with the sun. But the first cool day, they were back, then gone, then back, more reliable than weathermen. And I realized they hadn't gone north at all, but up the mountain, as invisible to me as if they had flown 1,000 miles, yet in reality, just out of sight, out of reach. Maybe at the end of our lives, the world lifts that slightly away from us and returns once or twice to see if we've refilled the feeder, if we still remember it, or if we've taken leave of our senses altogether. The Underworld, a poem by Sharon Bryan from Sharp Stars, published by Boa Editions and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Reputation.com, whose Reputation Defender service is designed to help businesses and professionals improve their search results. Learn more at Reputation.com. Produced by Nick Vetter. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
In the phone booth, using a phone book. But when you use that phone book and dispose of it, it doesn't just go away. And with me to talk about what to do with things like phone books and catalogs and paper and that kind of stuff is Jim Panora's Solid Waste Coordinator and Public Works Waste Management with City and Borough of Juneau. Jim, thanks so much for coming in.
No, thanks for having me today.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, so let's talk about this a little. It's an interesting thing that when you deal with solid waste and, disposable diapers get a bad rap, and probably rightly so. They don't ever go away. They stay in the landfill forever. But really, paper is the thing that takes up a lot of room in a landfill.
Amazingly enough, you're exactly correct. There's been research done. We talked about it a little bit earlier. You would think that if paper and phone books and magazines in a landfill would decompose, the majority of them do not for years and years and years.
For one reason, we put our garbage in plastic bags typically and then throw away the plastic bag so it seals it in there.
That's exactly correct.
But even not, it's sort of, once it's in a landfill, it sort of cocoons in there, and you have to go through a lot of different processes to get the air back in there to get stuff to decompose.
Yeah, it needs air to decompose, and landfill, is space and money, so they want the in-place density is the best they can get it to make the most money on the permitted volume that they have.
Yeah. So what are some tips about getting rid of all this paper? We get all this junk mail and catalogs and all this stuff.
Exactly. And thanks for having me in to talk about this. This is a new program that I'm kicking off through CBJ, City Borough of Juneau. We partnered up with the Juneau Friends of Recycling. And Catalog Choice is a free opt-out service to opt out of junk mail that you receive. What we're trying to do is stop it at its source. Once it hits your mailbox and you get it, then it goes in the garbage or recycled. Either way, it costs us money. So at Juneau, we have a website now. It's all up and running, and it's juneau.catalogchoice.org. And I would urge everybody to get on there and take a look and sign up for free. Catalog Choice has many other municipalities and counties clients, and I did the research, and I thought, because of our location and because of a lot of us do order through the catalog and online, And when we do so, we get on a hit list by all this other stuff that we really don't want.
We've all experienced that, man. You make one order at wherever, at online even, and all of a sudden you start getting every L.L. Bean and every other catalog under the face of the earth.
Yeah, exactly. Well, according to Catalog Choice, over 80 billion pieces of unsolicited mail are received by Americans each year.
80 billion
pieces. So, being we're in Juneau, and I want to cut the carbon footprint and trees and stop the solid waste, I thought this is an excellent program.
Yeah.
The CBJ, we paid out of the Public Works funds for it for a year. I'm going to have daily reports I can pull up and see how many people signed up. Another issue that come up, or it's not really an issue, there was 420 citizens already signed up for this without doing anything. So I did a little bit of research on how much that saved and what was going on. I thought, you know what, let's give it a try for a year and see what, you know, see how much solid waste we can save from recycling or going into the landfill, but also the CO2, carbon footprint, and water, and see how many opt-outs we get.
Is there a goal that you have for how much tonnage or how much you're trying to save?
Well, if there's already 420 residents and they all got an email yesterday because they are already account holders. So they got an email saying Juneau now has its own website. It has a link on our website, juneau.catalogchoice.org, and there's a link there to the juneau.org recycling hazardous waste events. So kind of a one-stop shop. You can go there, hook up, go through their list. They have over 8,500 clients that have signed up with Catalog Choice that all you have to do is mark the box.
You know? So anyone listening right now can just go to juneau.catalogchoice.org.
Yes, that's correct.
And they can click through. Now, is it a thing that you can select which catalogs you want and don't want?
Yes.
Or that's what you do? So you say, oh, I do like L.L. Bean.
Yes.
I want to keep getting my L.L. Bean, but the rest I don't need.
Right, exactly. And you give yourself a name and a password, and then they give you an account, and you're in. Every time you get in, put your email address, password, however you'd like to do it. And like I say, there's going to be other pop-up information there. Juneau Friends of Recycling, if they have an event or anything, we will get that posted. It has a link to the juneau.org hazardous waste and recycling site.
Now, sometimes when you deal sometimes with online spam, they say, never reply. Never let them know that you're a real person out there, because then they'll really go after you. Now, so is there an assurance that people have that signing up for the service won't in some way tag that that is a real person at that address? There's a live one. We're going to go after that one. Is this something that's federally legislated? Or?
As far as when they get notification that you don't want a catalog in that is federally regulated, that you opt out and you have the right to do that. Catalog Choice has gone a couple steps above that, and they go by your address and your zip code, and then they check reference that with the post office to make sure that's a correct
address. Okay, so they're doing an extra step above and beyond to make sure that it's a...
Oh, yeah, exactly. Matter of fact, when I did my investigation into this, and also talked to a few residents that were actual account holders and really liked it and been account holders for years, but King County, Chicago, New York, Portland, they're all signed up with this service.
Is there any estimate about how much they've saved or how much has been saved so far from landfills because of this program?
There is, but I'm not going to really throw that out there.
Okay.
You know, we're 32,000 people. You know, we're a population base of 32,000, and I'm all excited about seeing how we can get this information out and get people signed up and see what we do in an annual year. And Juneau Friends of Recycling are going to do a lot of the groundwork and education, and we really plan on getting this out there.
And do we in Juneau have a particular need to cut our waste stream? I mean, is our landfill I would think that our landfill is pretty limited. We don't have a lot of room in Juneau. And
the landfill's privately owned, and recycling any waste we can save from going in there extends the life of it would be one way to look at it. A lot of it does get recycled. I actually went out and set at the recycling center and kind of went through that out there, and you'd be amazed. We have a lot of environmental astute citizens that protect the environment and recycle. We recycled 2,400 tons last year of material, and that's without any of this type of program stopping the waste before it gets here.
And that's the cardboard and the paper bottles and cans and all that
stuff.
That
and I'm trying to expand that service with keeping the cost of operating that service down, you know.
Now, what happens to the paper and cardboard, for instance, that goes into the recycling program? Where does that stuff go? Does it get barged out and go to a facility somewhere south? Or
The city's recycling program, source separated, the cardboard, paper, aluminum, is all separated out, gets baled up, put in containers, and shipped south. Now, some of the containers may be a mixture of cardboard bales and paper. That has to be split back out so they can put it in shipping containers to ship it to market. The markets for recycled materials, Taiwan, China, that's where it really goes.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, so they're the ones that are buying and then
manufacturing new products and filling containers up and shipping us new stuff.
Yeah. That's recycling. That's kind of what it's all about. It recycles back at you. Well, this sounds like a great program, Jim. It's juno.catalogchoice.org. That's the place that you can go right now, whether you've signed up before or not. You can go to juno.catalogchoice.org and you can check off all the way down the line every catalog that you no longer want. Maybe you didn't want it in the first place. Maybe you signed up long ago and don't want it anymore, and you can let all those companies know to no longer send you the catalog, and that'll end up saving that one less catalog going into our landfill.
Well, catalogs, magazines, junk mail. I know I get a lot of junk mail for different credit cards and this, and I'm tight, you know.
Yeah.
So I jumped on it and signed up, and my mailbox has been reduced.
That sounds like a relief.
Yeah.
Just going out to the mailbox and getting letters really meant for me.
Just the stuff I want.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Except for the bills.
Can you do that? Can you just say, I don't want my bills anymore?
Yeah, I don't think that'd be wise.
I don't think so either. All right, Jim Pinor, thanks so much from CBJ. That's one more time, JunoCatalogChoice.org. JunoCatalogChoice.org. That's where you go to sign up to get rid of that. Those extra catalogs, those extra pieces of junk mail you no longer want, and you can keep the landfill from filling up with unwanted catalogs, junk mail, and phone books. Jim, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
All right.
I'm in the phone book.
Welcome back to a Juno Afternoon here on this Tuesday. Andy Klein with you. Pat Moore's feeling a little under the weather, but he'll be back with us on Friday. Decreasing clouds is what's in the forecast for The rest of today, and then mostly cloudy skies tonight with a chance of snow and rain tonight. And snow and rain is in the forecast for tomorrow morning, then turning into rain as highs get around 35 degrees. Karen Smolin has joined us next here from the Juneau School District. And February is Career Technical Education Month, Karen, right? So what does that mean? Tell me what that's all about.
Well, it's just a celebration of those courses and programs we offer in our schools along with our community. So,
and I think a lot of times people don't think about all that. I mean, we think about the basic stuff, but there's all these really cool programs out there, including newer stuff like learning CAD and stuff like that, which is really cool, but also stuff like culinary arts and those kinds of things. So tell me all about all the cool stuff that's happening.
Okay. Well,
a lot. Right?
A lot. There's a lot. I'm trying to think where to start.
Okay.
Well, we've got, just to give you a sense of system-wise, we've got career pathways in our high schools, and students can choose from a series of elective courses that are connected to different career areas. And there are unique career pathways at JD High and Thunder Mountain High School. Programs like, you've heard the term ACE, mm-hmm. which is the Architecture, Auto, Construction, and Engineering program. So there's a lot of unique elective courses connected to that. Our Business and Communications, Health Sciences, even Fine Arts. Thunder Mountain has courses in a focus of Marine and Environmental Sciences and STEM, and also Business and Fine Arts. And a lot of those courses, students have the opportunity to earn university credits for some of them, meaning they're aligned with university classes. And there's a term called tech prep or dual enrollment where they earn high school credit and university credit.
And at the same time.
At the same time.
Credit towards graduation, but also credit towards
building a university transcript.
Huh.
And what the best part about this is that because it's being taught by a high school student, the student only has to pay $25 a credit or $75 for, say, 3 university credits. Now, that speaks our language because university courses are very expensive these days.
Yeah.
So it's a great opportunity for students to get a head start on building those transcripts. So a couple of those courses this semester, this is a good shout out to parents, the registrations are due to their teachers. They're high school teachers, and students have been giving these forums, and I'm just putting a reminder out. Courses like Accounting 2 and Creative Woods 1 and 2 and CAD 1, Basic Construction and Metals 1 and Auto Mechanics 2 and Oceanography and Intro to Health Sciences, Med Terms, Marine Biology and Fisheries Tech. All those courses offered between our two key high schools and also EMT. All those
courses. That's really, when you just read down that list, I just think about, wow, those don't. That's an amazing opportunity to, in high school, be taking things like Fish Tech 1 and Oceanography and Metals and Basic Construction. What a great opportunity, yeah.
Right. So if any parents and students are listening, you need to get those forms in to your teachers by tomorrow or Friday during parent-teacher conferences. And once again, it's $75 for 3 UAS credits, which is pretty amazing.
that's a cheap college credit right there, yeah.
Right. And a lot of those courses build towards degree programs at the UAS campus, which is also really nice.
Well, some of the highlights that you've got, one that kind of jumps out at me is that you have a culinary teacher at Thunder Mountain High School that is getting some real recognition.
Well, this was news just to us last week, and Patrick Roach is the culinary teacher at Thunder Mountain High School, and he was recognized as Alaska's Educator Excellence Award winner for the year, and it was by the National Restaurant Association Educational Foundation, a mouthful.
Wow, but still, what an amazing thing.
Quite an honor
to
have a statewide recognition, and he really does deserve it. He's really an extraordinary teacher with a lot of student interest in his courses, and what's really cool there is that his courses also provide UAA Culinary Arts program credits. On top of that, so a student could be taking those classes and bypassing maybe a semester or so worth of courses at UAA's culinary program, which is a 2-year degree program.
You get a jump on the other top chefs out there.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, here's the other cool thing. He's taking a team of students with two chefs that have been working with him here in town, Chef David Moorhead and Chef Jonah Keene. They're preparing a team of students to go to the state ProStart culinary competition in a week.
Oh, wow.
Now, if you might recall,
it's like Alaska Iron Chef.
That's exactly
right?
what it's
yeah,
like.
Yeah.
And about 2 years
Very
ago,
cool.
we won the state championship. So we beat out, you know, Anchorage and Mat-Su and even Kodiak, which have very strong culinary programs. So we're ready to go again, and the team has got has cooked up quite an impressive, and I can't tell you what they're cooking yet.
I'll tell you something.
Menu.
Team sports have changed since I was in high school. Now, we didn't have a team.
For culinary.
Top chef team. that's an awesome thing to hear about. Very cool.
Yeah, well, stay tuned for the news on that one because we're really excited.
Now, something I'm interested in is video production. I've got
that's
that
right.
sort of interest, and I know that JDHS has that program as well.
We have a really strong video production course. It happens in the 0 hour of the mornings, and we produce a news show twice a week. And it's coordinated by students, and Miko Wilson works with our students and teacher Carol Scherson, and they, you know, write their scripts and put together a plan. We've got a studio.
I've worked with these kids. I've done roller derby, play-by-play, and a lot of these kids are working the technical stuff on the roller derby when we're doing the roller derby stuff. So it's a live sports broadcast, and they're in there. They're doing the running the replay and the slow motion stuff.
Right.
And it's been great to work with them, and they really get a lot of knowledge in that course.
They've got a lot of good technical skills. I mean, they've got a whole studio there with all the buttons to figure out, which is cool. You know, on top of it, we had these two interns, or I believe there were four interns working for the state with the state ed tech director, Roxy Morant, and they're doing a lot of tech support for her, including I had the pleasure of working with them at a state meeting last week where they were creating videos and interviewing statewide career and tech ed educators to get their perspective for a PSA for it. So they're getting some really broad experience, and they have some really good skills. So you'll see, ready to come work for you guys.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So, and you refer to this, and I kind of know what this is, but the 0 hour courses and after school classes. So tell me about what's offered there and what that allows kids to do.
You know, we have an opportunity to extend the school day. The high school day officially starts with period one, and it's typically at 9:15 in the morning, and the school day goes till 3:45. But we have 0 hour classes, meaning from 8 to 9:15 there are classes, 8 AM till 9:15, and after school from like 4 o'clock to 5:30, and sometimes they're compressed schedules, so you get a little, you know, 2 hour block of time, and you can accomplish the course in a shorter amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
So we offer those opportunities so we can make it accessible to kids to grab some of these cool classes that we have.
Yeah, and sometimes just scheduling and that kind of thing. Your course schedule has a conflict, but the 0 hour allows you to get in the courses. Yeah,
that's right. It's hard on a high school student. They've got a lot of required courses, and we're trying to make it accessible to them in other ways.
Yeah, and in this area, so there's accounting two and video production, metals, wood, EMT, and then intro to mining, and that's in partnership with UAS as well.
The intro to mining class is an interesting class. UAS is sponsoring it. They were supported by the mining companies. And we've got it's focused on high school kids, exposing them to the opportunities and occupations in mining. There are close to 20 students from Juneau in it, but it's also statewide. It's a project where they're videoing in live kids from around the state, but it's hosted here in Juneau. And really, a lot of the kids from last year and hopefully the students from this year, and they're typically upperclassmen and seniors, the UAS mining training program is looking at them,
mm-hmm.
and the mines offer them potential internships or jobs in the summer, hoping to get them that foothold and pathway into jobs there. So,
yeah. Well, is there anything else you want? This February's Career Technical Education Month, so there's this whole gamut of things going on. Is there other stuff you want to make sure that people know about?
Sure. I'd like to highlight a couple of quick things and just say that it's just an opportunity to celebrate career and technical education. And tomorrow at Floyd Dryden in the morning, we're having a career day with community members from all kinds of careers coming in and engaging kids in some hands-on activities. We had job fairs today at JD High and tomorrow at Thunder Mountain for summer job fairs. And we have an apprenticeship fair coming up in March for all high school and middle school kids to kind of explore those careers.
Oh, that would be cool.
So,
we're
trying to get kids connected and also hear from people in the community about the great opportunities they have. And one other highlight is a girls group we started called Ignite. And it's to just engage girls more in looking at the STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math occupations, and having them have an opportunity to look at those careers, talk to women in those fields, and encourage them to take related courses and to explore it further.
Yeah, it can be a great career path. Obviously, some of those are some of the best paying, best, most in demand jobs, some of those science and technology jobs and math based jobs. But there seems like there's a disparity there. Not as many young women are going into those fields.
That's right. And so we're trying to attract them and engage them in as many ways as we can. And this is one other method. So
great. Yeah. Well, Karen Smolin, thanks so much. You're the coordinator with the career technical education classes in Juneau. And sounds like just a whole bunch of great things. Once again, the main deadline people need to know about is if you want if you're a kid and you want to, or if your kid wants to get in with the courses that have that agreement with UAS, UAA, and UAF. That deadline is coming up here this week.
That's right.
So get those courses in. Get those forms in.
Get those forms to the students' teachers here at high schools.
If anyone's hearing this now, is it too late to get the form?
Nope. Okay. They can email me or have their student contact the teacher. There are parent teacher conferences this week, so you can also get it from the teachers there.
So not too late to sign up for those.
Not too late.
Got to get quick turnaround so you can get a $25 credit at UAS or UAA or UAF.
$75 for three credits.
Yeah.
It's a great deal.
It's a great deal. All right. Thanks so much, Karen.
Thank you, Andy.
All right. That's it for a Juneau afternoon today on this Tuesday. Once again, mostly cloudy skies forecast for tonight with a chance of snow and rain and lows around 28 degrees and a snow likely in the morning for tomorrow and then a chance of rain in the afternoon and snow likely for tomorrow night as well as it's getting down to around 30 degrees at night. Once again, that's it for Juneau afternoon. Thanks to all my guests for coming in, and including the folks from Mud Rooms. Go check them out 7 o'clock tomorrow. And also for the 1 billion rising in Juneau celebration at the SOB Thursday at noon. And go to juneau.catalogchoice.org to get rid of those unwanted catalogs and junk mail. We're going to hear from NPR News next.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Jack Spear.